Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Double Play Podcast. In this episode, Ryan and I are talking about a lot of things. We're in person for the first time since last summer, so super excited about that. Got a ton of MLB topics to discuss today. We're going to talk about the top 10 most disappointing players in our eyes and whether they can turn it around as the season continues on. We're going to talk about two teams on opposite sides of the spectrum, the Mets, who have been really disappointing, and the Orioles, who are kind of blowing us away and flying under the radar. But Ryan, it's good to be back. We've got summer now where we can really fully think about the MLB season again. And also a time where we have to start thinking the results actually matter. So there's a lot going on, and I'm excited to be with you here back in our hometown to talk about some baseball.
Yeah, this is what we kind of look forward to in this season, the dog days of summer with baseball. And like you said, this is where things start to matter. And I mentioned in our last episode, it might have been 2 weeks ago now, where this is the point of the season where you have to start looking into the results. The results start to matter, where stats start to be more than just a fluke, where it means something that you're playing well, and the teams that are playing well, it's start to maybe be sign of what they'll end the season, and teams that turn bad, it's time for them to turn it around. So it's excited, like you said, school's over, back home, excited to watch a lot more baseball, and I can't wait to get to it.
Well, the first thing we want to talk about is the top 10 most disappointing players so far this year. And the driving question, of course, you know, we don't want to dog on players, but it's whether these guys are going to turn it around. You know, we see guys every year that start off the season kind of slow and they get back to their normal area. But we've also seen guys that will sometimes just have uncharacteristically pretty bad seasons. And we're about a quarter of the way through the MLB season so far, and these guys are not off to the hottest start. Who do you want to start with?
Starting off with Alek Manoah, who was a top three finisher in Cy Young voting last year. And it was a guy, he's under 25, was looking to be the future of the front end of the Blue Jays rotation, and it has just not gone well for him so far. 4.83 ERA with a 5.75 FIP, which means that he might that ERA number might be better than what it should be with the FIP, and 41 innings pitched, and it's just really been kind of surprising to see him there. Kind of what's the story behind that? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, you take a look at some of the other stats as well. And, you know, with pitchers, sometimes the expected stats, it's harder to really tell whether they actually mean something. But Manoah is a guy that a lot of people last year said overperformed his expected stats. And this season, his expected stats are even worse than his already poor, you mentioned 4.83 ERA, but his K per nine is down to just around 7 batters per 9 innings, which would be a career worst. And his walks per nine up to 5.5 batters for an entire game, which would also be a career worse. So simply put, he's not striking guys out. He's walking too many guys. He's getting hit hard a little bit more this year. You look at his Baseball Savant page. All these numbers are below the 20th percentile among all major league pitchers. Expected ERA, expected batting average against, expected slug against, K percentage, walk percentage, whiff percentage. Not getting swing and misses, still getting hit pretty hard. And, you know, guys should be, at least according to the expected batting average and slug, hitting the ball a lot against him and hitting it for extra base hits.
And it does make sense that his FIP is a little bit worse than his ERA, because seeing the Blue Jays, they have some great defenders out there. They got Varsho and Kiermaier, so to pair with Artie Springer in the outfield, those are some three great outfield gloves. And so when you're pitching to a 4.83 ERA, when your defense is going to help you out that much, it's really kind of just speaks to that you're not pitching well. And like I said, it's a guy who, at least I thought, was kind of the future of that Blue Jays rotation. I know you said he outpitches expecting a little bit, and that's a little bit because of the defense and just...
He seemed to, like... People seem to believe he like, stepped up in the big moments. Like, you know, even he would let runners on, but then he wouldn't let them in. And sometimes people call that clutch, but, you know, the people that follow the analytics would say, eventually that's going to come back down to earth. I mean, his ERA last year was a full run lower than his expected ERA. And you mentioned third in the Cy Young voting. I think a lot of fans can be endeared by a clutch player, but this is one that I think the analytics community will look at and say, hey, we were right on this guy. You know, he might have had a good 2022, but in 2023, I think you're seeing a little bit more of what Manoah is. Would you agree with that? Do you think he can bounce back, or are you, you know, do you think he's going to be more clutch down the stretch?
I definitely understand what you're saying. And it kind of got the vibe that he just had that dog in him. And he was dominant in those big moments, and he would come off the mound, show emotion, and that's kind of what the fans saw. And it kind of leads you to believe that he's just a guy that's what happens. He gets out of those big scenarios, but like you said, some guys have that dog in them, and some guys maybe just get lucky and think they have that dog in them. So we'll see what it means from Noah down the stretch, if he can kind of figure this out. It could just be, you know, a regular slump. Like you said, he's a young pitcher. Maybe he pitched really well last year. Teams are starting to figure him out a little more. Maybe he has to adjust now. But whatever it is, he's been disappointing this season.
Yeah, I think he'll bounce back a little bit more. I mean, you have a guy like Manoa. There's clearly talent there. Sometimes you look at teams that come out of a rebuild a little too early. Sometimes young players can get themselves into some situations early on in their career. They really dominate, and they're expected to do that all the time. I mean, being under 25 years old and being an ace of a team that is, you pick to go and win the World Series or lose?
Be in the World Series.
I mean, that's a hard thing to do. So sometimes you get swept up in that. You still mentioned it's only around 8 starts for Manoa so far this year. He's still going out there pitching every 5 days. And with a guy this young, you want to believe that he can bounce back. But some of these numbers, they are the most, I don't know how to put it, but they don't make you super excited about the rest of the season for Manoa. But I do think the talent will eventually win out. I traded for him in fantasy baseball and gave up Wander Franco, which is not looking to be a good trade so far this season. But I think Alec Manoa can turn it around. You know, maybe he's not going to finish in the top three of the Cy Young again, but I certainly think that he's too talented and too young to let this go to waste. The second player we want to talk about is Jose Abreu, the new Houston Astro, signed a near $60 million deal in the offseason. It has not been pretty for him so far. He's got a .213 batting average, an OPS that is just above 500 with a full -1 WAR. He's one of two qualified hitters that has not hit a home run this year. What's been the problem with Jose Abreu?
It's really just shocking to see. The guy went 2 years removed, or 3 years removed now from an MVP in the shortened season. And it's really been the power numbers that have struggled. Like I said, didn't hit a home run. He's a guy who kind of made a name for himself on the long ball. So it's really just kind of a shocking to see all around. It's a team in the Astros that are struggling. And it's interesting to see if he can figure it out. Maybe it's being with the White Sox for so long, having to figure it out with the Astros. Whatever it is, the Astros kind of are needing them to turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard. You do mention, you know, some players struggle moving from league to league, but also if you're with one team for so long, it can be hard to bounce back. And you're learning, you know, a new coaching staff, a new, you know, department, a new batting cages, new spring training facility. It's all different. So a guy like Jose Abreu, a veteran, probably used to the same routine every offseason with Chicago, maybe things are changing around a little bit. But he's tied for the second lowest WRC plus among all qualified hitters in baseball. This is a guy that this offseason, while a lot of people in previous offseasons have said Jose Abreu is overrated, I thought he was a little bit underrated coming into this year because he had one of his best seasons of his career. I would say probably a top three season of his entire career last year. So thought he was kind of more on that underrated side now. He's proving me wrong by having just an abysmal start to the year. Do you think he can turn it around, or is this a kind of one of those scenarios where we see a player have the wheels fall off a little bit down the stretch of their career?
I think he can definitely turn it around. And I mean, like you said, he's switching to a new team late in his career. So, I mean, it could be kind of a combination of just regression, getting older, as well as learning that new team. But I think there's got to be some sort of positive regression for him. Whether that be just learning how to hit without some power, maybe whether the power is because of that switch or because of the age, eventually the power kind of leaves you as you get older. And so it's coming at a bad time for Jose Ramirez Jose Abreu and the Astros, that is. So I think he'll turn around, whether that be finding his power again and hitting more long balls or kind of reinventing himself as a hitter. I think he's kind of too good of a pure hitter to not figure it out, and I think he'll turn around.
Well, some righties too, instead of like finding more power, all you have to do is find a way to direct your power when you're an Astro. If you hit it towards the Crawford box, it's probably the easiest place for a right-hander to hit a home run in the big league. So if he could just find a way to maybe redirect his power to left field, that could be a way to try and figure out some home runs. But Jose Abreu feels like too crafty of a veteran to have this bad of a season. You know, maybe he's not going to be an MVP contender or have one of the best seasons of his career, but he's going to be an above league average hitter, you would have to assume, for the rest of the season, or else. For the Astros, you just paid him $60 million over 3 years, so you would hope that he's able to bounce back and be at least a above-league average hitter.
Absolutely. Like we said, the Astros need it, and moving on to another team that's kind of struggling and needs some production, it's the Mets and next disappointing player, Starling Marte, who just been frankly bad this season. A 224 batting average with a 67 WRC plus. He's got a lower slug than on base percentage. So his on base percentage is also only 292. So he's barely getting on base, not hitting for much power. It's just the only thing is when he gets on base, he's able to steal bases. And so that's really the only value he's providing for the Mets right now, at least on the offensive side.
Yeah, just five extra base hits for Marte this season. He's got one homer and four doubles. I mean, that's it. Like, I know that Marte is one of those players where if you hit a single, sometimes it's basically a double because he can steal. And he does have the nine stolen bags, but he's advertised as a player that will get on base, he'll steal an extra bag, he'll play great defense for you, and sometimes he'll walk into some power. You know, be around that 20 home run a year mark. But right now, only one homer on the season, not many extra base hits, only the other four doubles. So with Marte, he's just not the player that I think the Mets thought they were signing a couple of years ago. When you talk about the defense, which is supposed to be his saving grace if he's not hitting the ball, he's 15th percentile in outs above average. So he's been a very poor defender for New York this year. One of the big reasons that their offense has not been playing as well as many expected it to be, they're paying him a lot of money to be putting up a 67 WRC plus, which is bottom 10 among all qualified hitters in baseball.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about the Mets, the offense as a whole, a little bit later in this episode, if you're listening on podcast, and another video if you're on YouTube. But it's a team as a whole that's struggling on offense, like you mentioned, and they kind of need him. And he was a guy who performed last season in 136 WRC plus in 118 games and in a 101 win season for the Mets, and for a team that's struggling across the board, frankly, on the offensive side of the ball, they've definitely had their struggles there. It's a guy they need to turn around.
Yeah, I think he will. You know, I'm not saying he's going to walk into more power and get all the way, you know, maybe above 20 home runs. But I think he's a guy that you're going to see him at least be the kind of player that you expect from Starling Marte. I think the defense can pick it up. He's obviously going to steal you bases. You just need him to get on base more and hit more doubles and triples. If he's not hitting home runs, he has to be hitting other extra base hits. Otherwise, you just can't have him in the middle of that lineup. And you know, Francisco Lindor has been struggling a little bit. You know, there's some other hitters on the Mets that we're getting into in our other discussion about them specifically. They need a guy like Starling Marte to step up and be that 120 to 130 WRC plus hitter that we know he can be. He bounces back probably, but he's definitely been one of the most disappointing baseball players this season in Major League Baseball. Let's go to the second pitcher on today's list. That's Nick Lodolo of the Cincinnati Reds. Seven starts for the Cincinnati Reds. He's got 34 and a third innings pitched, a 6.29 ERA. It's been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde season for him so far. Really good start. He's been really poor since.
Yeah, he started off with three good starts, 2.12 ERA through 17 innings pitched, and had a seven innings shutout game in there, and then four bad starts. And now he hits the IL with a calf injury. So it kind of makes you wonder, maybe it was something lingering, maybe he was hurt, but it was a guy who was hyped up going to the Sierras, a potential breakout pitcher and leading the front end of that rotation, something to look forward to for the Reds. And now you kind of string a few bad starts together. The ERA is now at 6.29. So it's something that's a struggle for the TCU Horned Frog, but it's something that is a question mark for the Red starter. And do you think it's partly injury, or is he maybe just not what we originally thought?
It is hard. We're never going to know whether it's injury or not until he comes out and maybe says it after coming back from the IL. But it's disappointing for sure, but it's not completely out of the realm of what we thought could happen, specifically just because of the way things work with Cincinnati pitchers. I mean, you're pitching in Great American Ballpark, which is outside of Coors Field, probably the easiest park for hitters to hit in. You could even argue first because it's so small. I mean, Coors has a big outfield at least, but Great American Ballpark, a tiny bandbox field. You're pitching there as a home pitcher. You're getting screwed by your own home field because you give up home runs. You can give up, you know, easy doubles off the wall. And for Lodolo, if pitching at home is not a great place for you to throw, you can end up with a balloon ERA. And I think you will see more volatile starts where maybe he's got one good start and the next one's a blow-up start. And you've seen similar things with Hunter Green, two guys that are already young, so they're going to be volatile in general. I mean, it's disappointing, but I don't think it's all that surprising. This was in the realm of possibilities to start the season. I don't think that he is not what we thought he was going to be, but I think that this is something that can happen. Unfortunately, it did happen to him, and we hope that he can have a speedy recovery.
And Lodolo is a little bit different than the guys who we previously mentioned on this list so far. the other guys being Marte, Abreu, and Manoah are guys that have shown that they can perform. And whereas Lodolo, it was a guy who's shown flashes and someone we were expecting to perform well. And that's kind of still what we're seeing here. He showed those flashes in the first three starts of what we thought he could be. But now with the four starts struggling, it's kind of, okay, maybe it's not his time yet, rather than the other guys who have been disappointing because they're expected to do better. This one is also expected to do better, but kind of from a prediction standpoint. So you cut him a little bit of slack there, and maybe it's just not his time yet, and he's a little bit more time to get used to everything. So maybe that could be a problem, whether it's injury, whether it's that. Something we'll see when he comes back from injury. And I still think, yeah, he's obviously a young player who has some better days ahead of him.
Yeah, I think it is disappointing, though, because there wasn't really a breakout pick that we were both more in congruence on, in agreement on. We were both saying, I think Nick Lodolo can be this. And you're like, oh, I was going to say he was going to be this. And, you know, we were both trying to like one-up each other on how good we thought that Lodolo and Hunter Green could be. And so just disappointing when you see those guys not off to the greatest start, especially like we saw the flash. We know what Nick Lodolo can be. Then unfortunately, he ran into those bad starts. So I think over the course of his career, he'll be fine. This year, if he's still pitching in Cincinnati, this is always a possibility. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to bring that ERA down. So hopefully when he comes off the IL, which we hope will be soon, we can see him bounce back. But I'm not as sold on him being, I think I said that one of the two Reds pitchers is going to be top five in the NL Cy Young voting. I'm not exactly sure I believe in that one anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one you went up me on. I had one of the Reds being receiving Cy Young votes, and I picked Lodolo in fantasy in our dynasty league, so there's still some hope there. But like you said, not off the start that I wanted. But moving on to our next player, now it's Andrew Benintendi of the Chicago White Sox, who was given the biggest contract in White Sox history going into the season, which kind of surprised me a little bit. I thought it wasn't too big of a deal. I think it surpassed $100 million, if I remember correctly. But he's the other qualified hitter who doesn't have a home run yet. We mentioned Jose Abreu. The other one is Andrew Benintendi. With a 77 WRC plus thus far, hitting 264. That's kind of the average has been the singles of what has been good for him in his career, and kind of always being around that 300 batting average kind of region. And so he's not hitting up to that. He's not getting home runs, not extra base hits. He's just really not hitting well.
Yeah, I remember you told me, because I was not a fan of the Benintendi signing in general, but you told me, this is a guy the White Sox need. You know, they've got a lot of guys with high potential that can hit home runs, but they don't have a, you know, a steady producer, a guy who's always going to go out there and hit 300. And I thought even then, I'm not sure he really fits the White Sox fabric pick. I don't think he was deserving of the contract that he got. Like, maybe he fit on the team, but the biggest contract they've ever given out, like, that was a little steep for me when you put it in those terms. But it is disappointing extra to see him not even be able to do the things that we were expecting him to do, which is, you know, hit 300, be a above league average hitter. You know, right now 77 WRC plus is just not going to cut it with the kind of contract that he's on. He's that other qualified hitter that has not hit the home run yet. So it's him and Abreu, one White Sox who left for Houston and one guy who just joined the White Sox. Both have not homered yet, but with Benintendi this year, since he's not hitting the ball, you have the hard hit rate and barrel rate that are both under the 10th percentile. They believe one is in the 5th percentile, one's in the 7th. So for a guy that, you know, he's always kind of had the magic in his bat, he's able to hit singles, hit doubles, hit triples, maybe not as many home runs as you would like, but he's always been able to find the soft spots in the deep end, hit it hard through the hole. This time he's not hitting it hard, he's not hitting it through the hole, and he's just not getting it on base enough for a White Sox team that's been maybe one of the most disappointing teams in the league in general this year.
Absolutely. The White Sox have been god awful so far. But
were you gonna say, like, that you believe me now when I told you you shouldn't have bid on the White Sox again?
Well, I mean, I wasn't in on the White Sox as much as last year.
You had them in the World Series last year, as did I.
So I did.
It would have been hard to be more in the White Sox.
When I tell you I was this close to having them make the playoffs again this year, so I have them out. So the record's looking like it's not going to be where I had him still. I think they were the first or second team out in the American League for me. But back to Benintendi, the guy who, right, they needed a more consistent hitter, and he hasn't even been that. And I even said the White Sox were a team that struggled with defense, and Benintendi's a former Gold Glove Award winner, and even that's not really there. And it was kind of a little bit like that in the past, but he's been below average defender at best this season so far. And so the things that at least I thought the White Sox were getting, and I'm sure the White Sox thought they were getting as well, both the consistent bat and consistent glove have not been there for him.
Yeah, we'll move on to a player that was on the fringe of making this list, but we figured we have to include him considering all that happened this offseason, the amount of money that he's making. And that's Carlos Correa, who was a Giant, then he was a Met, but he ended up with the Twins, and he is not having the greatest season so far. I mean, as we all know, the big contract after all the drama that went on, but he's just not been all that great this year. 84 WRC plus, hitting just 200. And this is after having a pretty strong week this past week. So these numbers just 7 days ago were a lot worse. I think he had a homer and four doubles this past week in a couple series. I think they played the Cubs and he played pretty well at the end of the series. But these numbers used to be a lot worse. The fans in Minnesota were booing him at one point, and he said he didn't even blame him because he was hitting so poorly. So Carlos Correa, a guy that almost got his way off this list with his performance this week, but just overall, you're talking about the whole season so far, quarter of the year, he's been one of the more disappointing players in the MLB.
He flew under the radar in terms of how disappointing he was a little bit. And I'm sure that would not have flown in with the Giants or the Mets if he got the contract there. But in the Twins, it's been maybe good for him. So far, you mentioned this, they're still booing him. And so he's really not performing. And for a team that's in first in the division, a little bit different than the other teams that we've mentioned having disappointing players. If he was getting production, the Twins are still in first place, and you imagine the Twins would have loved to have his production, because then they could maybe be building a steady lead in the division right now. They're still at the top. We just talked about the White Sox, who thought to maybe be one of those teams up towards the top with a chance to win it in a weaker NL or AL Central. They're not going to be there, so really it's just going to be the Twins and the Guardians. And if you're the Twins, you still like where you're at, even without Correa's bat, because obviously you'd love to have him in there and building up a lead. But if Correa's going to be slumping, you got to figure the guy you gave that massive contract to isn't going to be slumping the entire season. It's not going to be a bad contract, at least we don't think. He's been consistent for so long. So you like where you're at if you're the Twins, with Correa's disappointing and still being in first place in the division.
Yeah, you know, they've gotten Joey Gallo, they've gotten some of these other guys that are hitting the crap out of the ball, and you just wish that Carlos Correa could be in that group as well. He's still playing pretty solid defense. You know, he's still hitting the ball hard. It's just a matter of time of stacking the days and the series and the weeks where he is above average hitter, and you do worry about the injuries at some point. But if he can stay on the field, if he can stay hitting the ball hard, playing good defense, and as this Twins team kind of gets into the pennant race, That's the time where we really see Carlos Correa shine. And if we get him in the postseason, we know how much of a leader and a big talent he is in the postseason. So excited to see, you know, what Carlos Correa can do as the season draws on. But I do think he'll bounce back a little bit more, and we've already started to see it for a week, but just had to work his way on the list.
I think he's too good not to. It's a guy, at least for me, I'd love to see him struggle. It's someone who's too good not to, and I think we're going to see it. Like I said, we've started to see it. So, guy the Twins would love to have back to his normal production soon, and we believe he will be.
Yeah, let me get through these next couple. These are, you know, players that maybe didn't have the highest expectations, but still have been disappointing this year. It's Andrés Giménez to start it off for the Cleveland Guardians. You know, a team that is trailing the Minnesota Twins despite winning the AL Central last year. They're not in the lead right now, and Menace is one of the reasons why. He was an all-star last year, received MVP votes at the end of the year because he was a big rising star, signed a 7-year deal in the offseason. He's been struggling to open the year so far this year as well. 231 batting average, an OBP below 300, a slug at just 366 with an 84 WRC plus. He's supposed to be that player that, you know, he hits for average, he can get on base, he plays great defense, has a high WAR, but this season has been pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it has been for sure. And he was a rising star, and I had him in fantasy last year. He was almost one of my keepers, so I believed in him. Defensively, he's still been solid, but offensively, the numbers, like we mentioned, have not been there, and he's just part of the reason that the Guardians are struggling and under 500 behind those Twins right now that we just talked about. So Andrés Giménez, it's disappointing across the board. The slugs out there, the average isn't there. Just overall, a disappointment for me at least, and I think he's a guy that also seems like he's gonna turn around at some point. At least I hope so. And the Guardians are gonna need it.
Yeah, let's go to another AL Central player. I feel like we've got a lot of AL Central players on this list, but Lance Lynn, a guy who has the highest ERA among all qualified starters in the league, and he was my dark horse for the American League Cy Young, had a really great stretch down the season, or down the end of the season last year after he came back from injury. But this season, a 7.51 ERA at 44 and a third innings pitched, giving up over 2 home runs a game for the 5th worst home runs per 9 among all starters in Major League Baseball. Just has not been able to figure it out this season. Been really disappointing.
It has been. And another White Sox, like you said earlier, the entire White Sox have been struggling. And I feel like we need to do a segment saying like players we were right on at this point. Because obviously if they're going to be disappointed to us, we thought they'd be good. And keep mentioning, we thought this guy was going to be this and this and this. So we seem horrible right now. So,
well, I mean, everyone kind of thought Carlos Correa would be good. Everyone thought, you know, Alec Manoah would be good. Lance Lynn's maybe one that was a little bit more on the fringe, where I think I was maybe higher on him than most. And so this was a guy that, for me, he had to end up on the list. But I don't think everyone was as high on Lance Lynn. So we don't miss on everyone. Just, I guess, our dark horse picks. Not for National League Rookie of the Year, though. James Altman's had a pretty good start to the season. But, yeah, you know, Lynn, the 3rd highest batting average on balls in play for all qualified pitchers. That's, you know, hitters, when they put the ball in play, have the highest batting average. So sometimes if that's a little high, you can think that maybe the pitcher's getting a little bit unlucky. He's got 3.86 FIP, so maybe he is getting a little unlucky with the White Sox defense. There are some things in play. You know, maybe the home run rate comes down. The BABIP, you would assume, is going to come down to a more normal level. And if the fielding's better, he get better results. But still, a 7.51 ERA, it's hard to pitch to that tune without having a slow start to the year. So as much as I would hope that Lance Lynn could turn it around with all the strikeout stuff he has, I think still striking out just barely under 11 batters per 9 innings, which is an elite number, I just don't know if he can turn it around with the White Sox team behind him as we continue to go through this year.
Yeah, and, you know, we can talk about the expected stats all day long, the FIP, the expected ERA, but bottom line, sometimes it just doesn't work out for you and you're still going to be expected to put results on. So even if we expect him to kind of positively regress a little bit, Lance Lynn's definitely been a disappointment, at least his numbers so far that he's produced. And moving on, another American League player. This one's George Springer of the Blue Jays, another Blue Jay that we talked about. We talked about Manoah a little bit earlier. And now Springer, who has been bottom 10 in WRC Plus among qualified hitters at 67 with a negative 0.4 WAR and really just not getting it done.
Yeah, you know, this one's, I think, one of the more debatable players on this list, because he is getting unlucky. He's got a big discrepancy between his WOBA and his ex-WOBA. It's weighted on base average for those who don't really follow the analytics stats, but his WOBA is 267, his ex-WOBA is 325, which means he should be getting on base a lot more. He's still hitting the ball hard, 98th percentile in max exit velocity. Good plate discipline. I mean, his expected batting average is 30 points higher than his regular batting average. His expected slug is over 100 points higher than his regular slug. So he's one of those guys you look at, could be getting unlucky, and he's still at the top of that Blue Jays offense. So I think of all the players on this list, he's probably the one I'm most confident to turn around, and maybe, you know, one of the top at least of these 10. But you're right, he just has not been getting it done. And what's interesting to me is you have 2 Blue Jays on this list, and yet they just took a series from the Atlanta Braves, and they're still playing very well in the AL.
And sometimes that's just baseball. Sometimes you get unlucky, and that's kind of what's so beautiful about the sport. You can hit the ball hard and still get out. And
I'm not sure George Springer thinks that's very beautiful, but yeah.
It's not. And that's the time as a hitter where you just have to kind of trust the process and understand that what I'm doing is right. I'm still hitting the ball hard. And so that's what he needs to just keep doing, stick to what he's doing. And you mentioned if the expected numbers, think he should be doing a little bit better. 9 times out of 10, we see that be true over a course of 162 season. So if he keeps doing what he's doing, not make it everything too complicated, don't not switch things up, we should see a positive regression.
Yeah, the last player on this list is one we feel we had to include, but you'll get into it in a second. It's Sandy Alcantara, the reigning National League Cy Young winner for the Miami Marlins. Across 8 starts so far, he's got a 4.91 ERA, 51 and a third innings pitched. So he's still going deep into games, but as you pointed out here, might be his downfall this season.
And this is the one player who's probably been the least disappointing, maybe overall numbers wise. Well, I mean, the Cy Young winner pitched into a 4.91 ERA is disappointing, but his bread and butter, which was going deep into games, like you mentioned, has been his downfall so far. 20 of his 28 earned runs allowed have been in the third and fourth time through the order. So he's been elite the first two times through the order. And then as he starts to get deep into games, which is what he was so good at last year, he only allowed 27 earned runs in the third or fourth time through the order all season last season. He's already at 20 this far into the year. It's really been the reason that he's been disappointing, at least for me, a guy that seemed to go 8 or 9 innings, one run or shutout every time he pitched last season. And that's how he won the Cy Young Award. So for when he's not able to do that, whether it's the manager and the coaching staff should be kind of pulling him out a little bit earlier, or if he's just, whatever it is, he threw the most innings of his career last season. So do you think last season was a fluke, kind of him being able to be so dominant late into games, or you think it's more of kind of fatigue a little bit and kind of just figuring it out?
I don't think it's a fluke, but I do think that we're not going to see him have the amount of volume he had last year with the amount of efficiency as well. You don't really see that from a pitcher. There's sometimes two sides of it. I mean, you look at a guy like Gerrit Cole, those are a lot of innings, but when you throw them in the innings, it's sometimes easier to give up home runs the third time through the lineup or give up runs the fourth time through the order. You have a guy last year like Spencer Strider, super efficient, but didn't throw that many innings. And when you only go 5 innings a start, the offense, supposedly offense, maybe sees you 2, sometimes 3 times, a little bit easier to pitch that way. And somehow Sandy Alcantara last season did all the innings and still had an ERA in the low 2s. So I'm not sure we're going to see that from him again, at least this year. But I don't think it's a fluke, I guess. I just think that, you know, this season, you get tagged for a couple runs and your ERA balloons up a little bit. But I think over the course of this season, he's still going to finish with a respectable ERA. You know you're going to get the volume from Sandy Alcantara. Maybe he's not going to be, you know, the unanimous Cy Young or anything like that, but I do think that he's going to go back to being one of the best starters in the league. And I still think he has been. The stuff's been there. It's just giving up runs in the 8th inning, something that not other pitchers have a chance to do, is just something he's doing so far this season.
And let us know what other players you thought were disappointing, what players have got to turn it around in these disappointing players, and we'll respond to all those comments down below. And so we're hoping these guys can definitely turn it around going forward.
Now, let's move on, though, to the next thing that we were going to talk about, which is the Baltimore Orioles. I wrote here, they're flying under the radar a little bit. You know, the Birds have been really good this season. They're getting overshadowed by some other teams across the league. But again, the driving question here is, are the Orioles a bona fide playoff team at this point? Because they have the second best record in the American League. I mean, that's something that it's not getting a lot of talk. The Rays getting a lot of hype for how well they've been playing. Right behind the Tampa Bay Rays are the Baltimore Orioles, second in the AL East, second in the American League, one of the best records in all of baseball.
The short answer to the question for me is no. They're not a bona fide playoff team at this point. They do not have a qualified starter with a ERA below 3, which is Tyler Wells is the only one at a 3, and everyone else is a 4.4 or above. And so they've been kind of carried by their offense a little bit and their bullpen. Yennier Cano has yet to allow a run through 19 innings pitched, and Felix Bautista has been just as dominant as he was last year with that splitter. He's a 1-something ERA right now, and that's where the success has come from. I think they were 8-4 in one-run games, and the offense has been kind of carrying them. 5.13 runs scored per game compared to 4.26 runs allowed. So the run differential isn't great for a team that I mentioned has the second best record in all of Major League Baseball. And so I think going forward, the answer to your question is no, as it being a bona fide playoff team. Not saying they're not going to be a playoff team. I think you look around the rest of the American League, there's definitely a case there. If the Rangers and Astros, whoever wins that division, feel like it's still going to be the Astros, and the Rangers are really going to be the only other team now, it looks like, to compete for that third wild card. You figure you'll have another one from the AL East, maybe even two, and then one more around. It's not going to be from the Central, it looks like. So definitely still could be a playoff team from here, but bona fide playoff team and kind of a lock, I don't think so.
Yeah, you know what? The Orioles are a team that I thought they were going to take a step back this season. And I kind of look up at the standings, and everyone's talking about the Rays. There you see the Orioles. They're right up there. And that was surprising to me. And I do believe that I was probably a little bit harsh on the Orioles. I was expecting some form of regression, but I think I was expecting a little bit too harsh of regression, and I wasn't accounting for the amount of growth that you could see from some of these players as well. They have a bunch of guys, I believe it's five right here, all above a 110 WRC plus, in Cedric Mullins, Adley Rutschman, Jorge Mateo, Anthony Santander, and Austin Hayes. Some of these guys I was higher on than others. I was high on Santander, obviously high on Adley Rutschman. Jorge Mateo is a guy that, you know, we weren't really expecting to break out this early in the season. But you mentioned it with the pitching, and that was the part that I think I was the harshest on for the Orioles, because the starting pitching wasn't good last year, yet somehow they went on this ridiculous path down the stretch. And hasn't been good this year. They are winning games, but I do think it tempers a bit. So I'm going to follow what you said. I'm pretty much in agreement with that. I don't think they're, you know, a lock. I don't think they're going to be the second best team in the American League. I do think, though, they can and at this point probably will make the playoffs. It'll be as, you know, one of the lower wildcard teams, probably second or third wild card. I don't think they will win the American League East. I don't think that they're going to finish second in all of the league or all of the American League in record. But I do think that at this point in the season, I have seen enough from the Orioles where I feel like I was a little bit too harsh on them in the preseason. I do think they can make the playoffs, which is not what I had them in my preseason record predictions.
Yeah, I mean, I was there right there with you. They were my first team missing out. I went bold and had the Angels making the playoffs. So joke's on me for believing in the Angels again. And so we'll see. Like I mentioned, it looks like it's going to be a battle between them and Rangers, or maybe even Astros if the Rangers can keep playing well. I might have to talk about them in a separate video soon. But like we're saying, offense has been great. Pitching, not as much. Bullpen's been good. See how it goes over the course of 162. But would love to see the Orioles in the playoffs. And we think they can be there.
Yeah, you know, maybe one of the pitchers breaks out. I mean, they've got Grayson Rodriguez in Major League bubble. Hasn't clicked yet, but at this point, with, you know, a prospect that big, it could just take one start where he snaps and goes on a crazy run. You have Kyle Gibson, who's reliable. He's never going to be amazing, but it just, if they can figure it out, maybe if they're willing to, they can add at the trade deadline. That would really make me start to believe in the Orioles, because they had the opposite effect last year where they were in the pennant race and sold some pieces. And, you know, they made some good trades. I believe that's how they got Yennier Cano, the reliever who's having such a good year for them. But if they go out and buy at the deadline, maybe add another reliever, maybe add a starting pitcher that you can, you know, add. I'm not sure who's going to be available, but if the Orioles will, you know, stomach the idea that they have to go out and spend and try and get some of these future players, I think that could help them down the stretch to combat, I think, the regression that we are going to see a little bit in this season, because it's hard to win when you're playing at such a razor-thin margin every single game with starting pitching that's not very reliable.
They are definitely, I think, one front-end starting pitcher away from being kind of a real contender, like a lock for a playoff team. Whether that comes from Grayson Rodriguez, who settles in and kind of looks to be the prospect and the major league player we thought he would be, or comes at the trade deadline, still to see. Feel like that's what's missing for the Orioles team, whether it be this year, the trade deadline, someone from within, or whether they go try and spend in this offseason. We'll see what happens, but I think that's where the Orioles are still lacking, and I think it'll come back to bite them a little bit if they don't address it.
Well, let us know down in the comment section. Who should the Orioles add? And, you know, maybe are there players on the team you believe in to step it up? I mean, we haven't even seen the best out of Gunnar Henderson yet that we're expecting. So we'll see. They've got a lot of prospects that they could move or they could bring up to try and make an impact. But let us know down in the comment section. Who do you want to see in orange pitching for the Orioles, you know, maybe in October? Now, we talked with Jack at Daily Dose of Baseball, who wanted Corbin Burns. So we'll see. Who's the option that you think the Orioles should go with?
I mean, Corbin Burns would be amazing, but it looks like the Brewers might not be in a position to sell. It's, I don't know it really for the Orioles, and it's going to be still so much to see who's going to be available at the deadline. A lot of teams are kind of in contention still. There's not a lot of teams who have fallen behind who have pieces to sell, like the A's and the White Sox. Maybe you could see like a Lucas Giolito. I could see that potentially being for the Orioles, who another guy who maybe is not a huge front end starter that kind of thought he would be a few years ago, but I think that could be a player that would look good for the Orioles and boost their rotation a bit.
Remember, I already talked about Lance Lynn. Maybe he picks up a little bit but wants out of Chicago if he doesn't like the poor defense playing behind him. Or we've already seen people think Tim Anderson may have said, "I hate this place," this weekend about the White Sox. So I called it preseason, saying I think the White Sox trade away some pieces. they're a team with possibility, and we'll see how it goes for teams like the A's or the Marlins or the Brewers, who are kind of always in that conversation. But we'll see as the season goes on. But let us know what you think the Orioles can and will do down the stretch of the MLB season.
And now moving on to the Mets, they're Metting already, and they've really been struggling big time as of late. They are 4-6 in their last 10, now under 500 and 5.5 games back of the division. It's really been bad. They've been dropping games to some bad teams, and they've been shut out 7 times already this year, 8 times all of last year. So that's really where it's been the struggles come from, offense and the pitching, who at least I thought would be volatile coming into the season. I always said their ceiling was the best rotation in baseball, and their floor was much lower, whether it be injuries, age, guys not panning out. We've kind of seen all of it in the rotation for the Mets so far. Figure some of that's going to go right eventually. Verlander and Scherzer have been hurt. Quintana's still out. So figure something's got to go right for the Mets on the rotation-wise. But like we said, this is the part where records start to matter and it starts to have an impact on your season. So if you're the Mets, you want to turn it around pretty soon, especially in the NL East.
Yeah, they've lost before Sunday. I believe they won on Sunday, but before that, 14 of their last 20 games they had lost. And this is supposed to be a juggernaut team. I mean, they're spending money like a World Series contender, and right now they're simply not. I mean, I had them winning the World Series this year, and I still do think that their roster is built to do it. We've seen a lot of the common tropes that have plagued some Mets seasons coming back to bite them. You've got paid players that are paid really highly that aren't panning out. You've got Verlander and Scherzer, who have combined to make just 7 starts this year, and Scherzer's got a 5.56 ERA, and as I even mentioned, Diaz got hurt in the WBC, so that's just a lot of money you're paying pitchers right there that have not been working out for your team this year. The rotation that you've mentioned is not rolling with the punches very well. You've got Kodai Senga in the mix, Carlos Carrasco, Taiwan Walker was out this offseason to go to the Phillies, so they're just kind of trying to find a way to roll with these punches of not having Verlander and Scherzer, not having Taiwan Walker after he left, bringing in Kodai Senga from Japan, and just not gelling all that well, and then just too many guys slumping at the same time, which you feel like for a Mets offense that is so deep and was supposed to be their calling card when we talked with Mark this offseason, you feel like you could trust every guy on the roster. Right now, you can't trust some of the starters. You've got Mark Canna slumping. Starling Marte, we talked ad nauseum about in the disappointing players list. Francisco Lindor has not been bad, but he certainly has not been the MVP leader they need him to be. And, Pete Alonso's been good. You've got some good contributions from other people, but just not coming together. And when you're getting shut out that many times, that shows me that they're not able to pick up their teammates that are slumping, which means that if some guy isn't playing well, you don't have someone else that's balancing it out by playing better than their norm. So the Mets just a team that aren't gelling right now. They're not playing very well. 3rd in the NL East, trailing both the Braves and the Phillies. And it's a dangerous spot as we're 1/4 of the way through the season, because a lot of money's on the line here out of the pockets of Steve Cohen, and the Mets are not backing it up.
And it's not panic mode for the Mets just yet, but it's close to that. And like you said, they're two big paid guys at top of the rotation, only made 7 starts, and this is a team that got out to a fast start last season. They were in the division for so long. We went back and forth whether it was going to be the Braves or the Mets. The Braves, who had a slow start, who was going to be atop that division, and so now it's the Mets who we find in a slow start, and the Braves out to a hot start. So you want to see the Mets pick it up a little bit. We always thought this year's division race would be similar to last year, and that it would be separated by a couple games. Last year, it came down to the tiebreaker with both teams winning 101 games. So we figured it'd be something similar to that this year again, and the Mets are going to need to pick it up if they want to have a chance to win that division and be back in the playoffs. Otherwise, could be looking at another wild card team, and with the 3-game series we saw last year, they lost to the Padres. The Phillies won that last year. If you run into a team with 2 good starters at the beginning, which they have at their peak, you could be in trouble in a 3-game wildcard series. So I'm sure they'd love to win that division, but if they're going to do that, they got to turn.
Yeah, the good news for them is Verlander is healthy again, so he's made 2 starts. Scherzer is back. He had a decent start the other day, went 5 innings, and they only allowed 1 earned run. A little shaky at times, but reeled it in, as we know Scherzer can do. He's still reliable, you would assume, at his age. But the good news is that those two are healthy. You have Lindor that's bouncing back a little bit from a slower start. Didn't end up on our disappointing players list, but a couple weeks ago might have. And you still have Pete Alonso hitting home runs. I think that Their lineup is still at a place where I feel good about it throughout the full course of the season. Don't think they're going to get shut out, you know, seven times every 40 games. But it is something you need to be concerned about. I think the question that I have is, do you think the Mets spent their money in the wrong place? Like, I think that they can bounce back with the roster they have right now, but do you think they spent it in the wrong place, you know, putting so much money into older players like Verlander and Scherzer, or do you think that there were other ways that they should have gone with it if they're willing to spend as much as we have seen them in the past couple off seasons?
I don't know if it was the wrong place, but it was definitely risky places, and this is what we talked about. There was risk involved with the money they spent. You know, Diaz, the big signing, obviously that's not really part of the risk. It sucks to see him get hurt in the WBC, but signing Verlander was not a head scratcher, but it was like, okay, that's a big risk paying a guy that much money, and Scherzer the year before, even if Verlander came off the Cy Young season, it was a risk, and he got hurt to start the year. Hopefully for them, that's the extent of the injury, kind of see him settle in, be healthy. So we'll see what happens in the future. They spent a lot of money, like you said. I don't know if it was the wrong place. There could have been better places, but it was definitely at a risk, and we're seeing that risk kind of play out.
Yeah, you want to see those guys like Verlander, Scherzer, Marte, Canna, a lot of guys they've poured some money into, that you want to see them play well. They're bringing up prospects that could help save them a little bit, like Francisco Alvarez, Brett Beattie, that are both up right now. But it's kind of, you know, the breakout pieces, like the middle of the lineup, middle of the rotation pieces that everyone thought would boost the Mets up because they are so deep. Like, I'm thinking like David Peterson in the starting rotation, Kodai Senga, who they brought over from Japan. Like, these are the guys that you want to see carry the load while some of the top players are struggling, because that's a sign of a good team, is when the team is struggling, other guys are stepping up. And that's just not what you've seen from the Mets this season. I feel like you haven't seen it much from the Mets in general over the past couple of years. I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of people say, you know, Mets are going to Mets, because they just don't look like a team like, you know, the Dodgers or the Braves, that when there are injuries, people step up. When some guy, you know, has to go on the bereavement list or has to go on the paternity list, like someone's biting, you know, chomping at the bit to get that next shot at that position. And right now, I don't think you're seeing that from the Mets, which is reflective in their record.
Yeah, and you mentioned all the guys who are struggling, Marte, Canna, sort of Lindor. That's what I was going to say next, is you're not seeing the Nimmos or the McNeil have kind of on a tear right now. Nimmo's been good. McNeil, you can almost lump into the guys who have been disappointing after winning a batting title. He's not near that average right now. So that's really what it comes down to. When guys are slumping, the great teams pick up the slack, and the Mets have the talent to be that great team, but they aren't right now, and that's what you mentioned. The record's under 500 right now.
Well, that's all we've got for you guys for this episode of the Double Play Podcast. It's good to be back in person and talk some more baseball a quarter of the way through the season. We got to start taking some of this stuff seriously. Let us know down in the comments section, if you're still watching, what you thought of some of these topics. You can also check out our social media, which will be in the episode description, both Ryan and I's personal, as well as our accounts. Got to try and get the TikTok views back up. You know, after finals, we'll be able to devote more time to social media, devote more time to the podcast. We're really looking forward to it. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. Alongside my partner, Ryan Donahue, I've been Jack Smith. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Double Play Podcast, and we will see you next time.